Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
My name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, not a Canadian. And Philly's really close to New Jersey, by the way. And I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, the unique long-form exploration of music, comedy, art, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style, which feels a lot more like a conversation with friends than a podcast interview. These conversations have included talking to people like Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the white hot lung Juliana Riolino, and one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kind of conversations vital, essential, and important, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Takes a long time to know that. Takes a long time to know that. Takes a long time. Takes a long time to know that.
Damon McMahon is a gifted lyricist, singer, multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, and producer, currently based in Brooklyn, New York. Originally from Philadelphia, McMahon has been working under the name Eamon Dunes throughout most of this century, making music that challenges genre categorization, but has emotive vocal hooks and wondrous structure. Following his 2018 album Freedom, McMahon sounds more liberated than ever on the sixth Eamon Dunes album, which finds him exploring an interest in electronic music and hip-hop and learning how to play instruments and use tools as an adult. The record's called Death Jokes. It was released by Sub Pop Records on May 10th, 2024, and it prompted Damon and I to connect for a talk about him moving back to Brooklyn after spending some time in upstate New York, how his exploration of hip-hop music technology is something of a nod to him stumbling upon a discarded cassette tape in his youth, the instruments he can play and what prompted him to find a teacher to learn a new one, how he interacted with music in his household as a kid, why Bob Dylan's singing is such a huge influence on him, musicians like him and maybe Kurt Vile, who seem so tapped into the world they're almost prescient, spirituality, teachers, and Hinduism, becoming a parent during a pandemic but transcending anxiety, legacy and protest music, tour, new music, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast. Spread the word about it. Leave nice reviews and ratings on your podcast platform. And make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. And where a $6 subscription means you can access every single episode of this show in its entirety, which is not the case without that subscription these days. But all amounts are welcome. You can donate whatever you want, but just letting you know, there's different tiers. You can learn more at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful independent record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and a great website, blackbird.ca, where you can order records and, you know, have them saved for you so you can pick them up at those stores, or you can have them shipped right to your house. It's just that simple. Say you want a copy of Death Jokes by Eamon Dunes. Head over to blackbird.ca, see if they can't get it for you. I bet they can. Plus, in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 863 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Damon McMahon of Eamon Dunes, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Damon, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm well. It's very nice to meet you and see you. Where in the world are you today?
I am in a basement in Brooklyn near the border of Queens.
Oh, nice. For some reason, I heard tell you were in Woodstock, New York, upstate New York.
I lived there for a while. Yeah, I finished this album up there, but I've since moved back.
Oh, okay. Cool. How are things in Brooklyn?
They're pretty good. Yeah. Kind of hot and kind of sultry day here.
Sultry? Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Hopefully it's, it must be a relief after the cold.
I prefer the cold and I dislike the heat.
I prefer the cold too. When I was younger, I used to make jokes about how I had more allure as a man in winter because I could bundle up. I feel less, maybe I have some body dysmorphia thing, but I feel like I have less chill and appeal in shorts and a t-shirt. But winter...
Certainly.
Yeah. I think winter, who is that mysterious tall man?
Big he is. Yeah. I feel the same way. When I wear a big coat, I feel sometimes very imposing. And then, shorts just,
Yeah. It's hard to look... You can't look cool in shorts. It's hard to look cool in shorts. Unless you're like Angus Young or Ian MacKay.
That's true. They both
very hard to look good in shorts. I agree. Yeah. I'm from Ontario originally, and now I live in Edmonton, Alberta. So
cool.
I have to wear long coats often. It's cold here. Have you ever been here?
I bet. Oh, yeah. I did a full, I played, of course, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver a ton, but I played a lot of other cities in Canada once too because I supported Mac DeMarco. We did like an in-depth Canadian tour together.
Yeah. Yeah. He has roots in this city, I believe.
Actually. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Nice. Yep. Well, it's great to meet you and talk to you and congratulations on this wonderful new record. I want to tell you honestly that at first I was a little overwhelmed and now the more time I spend with it, I'm like, this is really brilliant.
Thank you.
To preface this, or rather to get into this conversation, I think it's safe to say that this album conceptually is about beginnings of some kind. And I think we should start, oddly enough, at the beginning of the beginnings. Can you corroborate I'm saying? And also, if that's correct, maybe tell us why you chose to learn a few new things and start.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Please.
Well, I like that. First of all, I thought you wanted to talk about the beginning of all beginnings where I was born. And that all sounded nice too. But then when you said beginnings, I was like, that's cool. What does he mean by beginnings? And yes, I did learn some things from scratch, but I thought, even how does this album pertain to beginnings even more abstractly? And I guess it could as well. But to answer your question, I began this album without any kind of themes in mind. Yeah, all the albums start with sort of just aesthetic or whatever musical curation ideas. So like, I want to make a fucking polka album or reggae album.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was like, I want to make Eamon Dune songs, but filtered through all this electronic music I grew up with. So drum machines and that kind of thing. And that was the beginning. That was the first idea.
Right. And this is novel for you. This was new. You'd not played around with these things before.
Well, that's not totally true. I mean, if you listen to all the Eamon Dune's records, like there's a song on Murders on Mine that has computer drums. And then there's an album called Spoiler that I self-released that was very experimental, and there was tons of drum machines on it. Through Donkey Jaw has a electronic song at the end. So I've done it before, but in a very like free kind of noise kind of way, you know?
Yeah.
And this was a very concentrated effort at like making electronic music.
Okay. And
rhythmic electronic music.
Yeah. And then also in the mix here, in terms of learning things, piano.
Yeah, right. Beginning there. Yeah, yeah. So I bought my first piano, like a little upright piano, and I called the piano tuner, and I was like, "Hey, I gotta get somebody to teach me how to play this thing because I can't do anything on it," you know. And he's like, "Oh, he's like, I have there's one teacher. You know, I have a teacher. His name's Janichi. That'll be your teacher." And I was like, "All right." What did I know?
Uh-huh.
And I was introduced to this like incredible person, this incredible guy named Janichi, who became my piano teacher. And we met weekly all right up until the pandemic for about 6 months. And he kind of taught me a lot of stuff, but I got decent enough that I could play these little gospel songs. And so a lot of the songs on the newer songs on this album are these kind of like piano gospel songs. We're kind of like, maybe like rhythm and blues, kind of like a Fats Domino thing or something like that. So yeah, I'm not very good, but he got me to be a rudimentary piano player.
That's cool. I mean, coming to piano later in life, I've heard, can be challenging. I know my son is 12. He's been doing piano 5, 6, 7 years now or something like that, and smokes me. I can't do it at all. I mean, he makes fun of me. Now he's like at a point where he's making fun of me. He's like, "You can't play." Like, I play guitar and drums, but I can't figure out the piano. Mm-hmm. What are or were your primary instruments?
I mean, I learned a little bit of guitar when I was a kid. I took like 2 years of lessons from some guy, you know, in my town. It was very cool. Actually, he taught me finger picking, like acoustic blues. He turned me on. He made me these mixtapes of pretty obscure acoustic blues music, American acoustic blues music, and he taught me all these finger pickings that I still use today. But that was all my training. So I've sort of stayed at that level. That's not really true. I have a specialness to the way I play guitar, but I'm not like a technically impressive guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
I still go to guitar stores to this day, and they all look at me like fucking shaking their heads. This fucking idiot doesn't know what he's doing. but I'd say I'm a singer, really. It's like I'm a singer, and then I'm a songwriter. I don't like singer songwriter because that sort of like, you know, implies a very specific style of music. But I write songs and I sing. But then I can play guitar. I play bass on this album, not very well, but I play bass. I play simple piano keyboards and then programmed drum machines.
Right. Okay. So you are, whether the guitar people know it or not, you're a multi-instrumentalist, Damon?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay. I'm a basic multi-instrumentalist.
Okay. I think this is a nice segue to go back to what you were saying about vaguely misinterpreting what I meant by beginnings. Mm. Why don't we go to the beginning of your origin story now? Because I want to figure out where you came up, and I also want to figure out how you got into music in the first place. So I think this is a nice time to do it. Can you talk about where you came up and how music entered your life? Sure.
Yeah, for sure. So I was born in Philadelphia, and very funnily enough, it's very pertinent. I unfortunately went to a memorial for one of my dad's cousin yesterday in Philadelphia.
Oh.
So I was just deeply, I mean, yeah, he lived to be decently old, but anyway, I was deep in my family history yesterday. So my dad's Irish from Philadelphia, my mom's Jewish from New York, and I was born in Philadelphia, and yeah, it was just amazing hearing these stories. Like everybody's named after a saint. You know what I mean? They all have the same name. You can't even keep track of who's who because they're only named John, Jim, Frank, you know, Tom, Paul, whatever. And there's a couple Marys. And they were even telling me the guy who passed was named Tom. He's very special. He was the black sheep of the family. And they were saying how this is how Irish Philadelphia gets. His job and all the brothers' group job was to clean Veterans Stadium, which is the Phillies stadium.
Oh yeah.
So they were like the janitors of the Phillies stadium, which is like, if you're from Philadelphia, it doesn't make any sense if you're not from Philadelphia, but it's about as like Irish Philadelphia as you get. So
oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's like, if you're like, yeah, it's like, that's, I don't know what the equivalent in Edmonton would be or something, but.
So the sports teams provide, jobs for.
They provide jobs and they provide like meaning. They even said it. They're like, we never talked about anything at home, but we could always talk about sports with our dad, you know, it's like, yeah. Anyway, so I came from that. That's my dad's side of the family. Like, you know, yeah. And that sort of paints a picture. And then his mom was from West Virginia, Wheeling, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. She was a country singer. So I think that part of my musical self comes from her. And, you know, she would sing standards and stuff. And she had a little trio that would sing on the local radio and stuff like that. And
would she be someone we would know?
Okay. In fact, yeah, I think I literally just that station may have tapes somewhere, but it's really like that. It was very small, local kind of thing.
Okay.
And my mom's side was, you know, you're Polish Jews or whatever, New York Jews, and lives in Manhattan. And then I moved to the suburbs of New York when I was a little older. And yeah, I mean, music, there's no music in my household really, except for like little bits of like folk and country music that my dad would kind of tease out. But really the only stuff they would play around the house was like classical music and jazz, you know?
Okay.
And my dad was a trumpet player. He played in the Union when he was in high school. And so he loved jazz, but they both really bonded over classical music. And,
This is interesting. So there was no music, but also a lot. And sophisticated music.
Yeah, it was very sophisticated. Yeah. Like even despite like wherever my dad came from, whatever, like they were very sophisticated people. And whatever. I mean, is that true? They liked this kind of highbrow stuff.
I think what you're getting at. I'll talk to some people and they'll say, "Oh yeah, my mom played me Aerosmith, and my mom played me
right.
You know, what,
there's nothing like that. Household.
But you were like music was part of the family lineage on some level.
Yes, but it was very severe and very somber. And it was like, I mean, I came from a kind of fucked up household, but I'll say there was no like raucous drums and like fucking blasting music and dancing around the house. Like no one moved and it was very quiet and like lights were dim and there was like classical music playing. And it was a heavy, pretty heavy vibe.
Okay.
So I kind of discovered music on my own. My dad turned me on to like Bob Dylan and the Band a little bit when I was 12, but that was his only discussion of music with me. My mom didn't like anything music at all, and he didn't reveal anything except for like this jazz and classical and stuff that he listened to. So I heard Bob Dylan and the Band when I was 12, but my real early introduction to music was hip hop. I mean, that's like that's what I discovered and kind of fell in love with, and it changed my life. I was walking down the street one day outside of school, and it was like the universe dropped it in my lap. I was like, it was an empty sidewalk, you know, and there was one object right in front of my feet, and it was like a face up, you know, cassette out of its box that had a big sticker on the front that said gangster rap. That's what it said. And it was a compilation that was like 90% Ghetto Boys. It was the Ghetto Boys' first self-titled album. And then a couple singles, because it was probably 1991 when I heard that. Honestly, it was just their self-titled album.
Oh, wow.
It was like, and anyway, that was one of my first musical experiences. And it like changed my life, you know.
Well,
and
I think you and I are aligned in terms of things we heard. I just want to, we don't know each other, so I just want to say, I assume we're going to talk about Jay Dilla on mm-hmm. during this conversation. Dilla is a huge influence for me. And Dylan is as well, just so you know, and you know, people who know the show know I'm a big Bob Dylan fan. I've seen him 40 times or something in the last 20 years.
Cool.
So I'm 3 times in the fall. And my son is named Levon after Levon Helm. Robbie Robertson was on the show some years ago. So I just want to frame some stuff that we have in common.
That's great.
Now, it's funny you brought this up, and your father played you this music, Bob Dylan and the band, because there's a song on your new album called What I Want. And I thought it had a vague allusion to Bob Dylan's phrasing in It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. And do you know what I'm referring to at all?
Yeah, I sure, of course. I mean, that song, was one of the only two old songs on the album. That one and the song Ian. I actually wrote those songs when I was like 20 years ago. And they were just sketches, you know, but I kept them kind of intact. Like, I only changed like fucking 7 or 8 words in either song.
Yeah.
And then the production, of course, is all new. But anyway, so that song is a lullaby, and it's What I Want, and it's very much like influenced probably even more by Bob Dylan than the newer stuff would be.
Okay.
Because I had less data in me at that time 20 years ago, you know? I mean, I was listening to all kinds of shit, but I think the kind of folkier influences were more pronounced. I mean, I could go on a full tangent.
You're on the right show. You're on the right show for tangents.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one specific tangent, which is Bob Dylan tangent. I mean, I don't normally go there with anyone. In fact, I was even thinking, like, at one point in my life, I would like to, like, write some sort of Bob Dylan treatise or something, like, just really, like, talk about him, because it's so deep to people who know what he means. Like, it's so deep and complex, you kind of can't talk about it. And then it also has such personal meaning to me. I mean, so... But yeah, Bob Dylan's phrasing,
yes,
his voice, you know, yes, even not the singing stuff, just his talking voice,
yes,
but the way he talks through his singing is so avant-garde and so revolutionary and so much of an embodiment of, I don't know, the modern world, like modern artistic expression and spirit and stuff, that he just like took a hold of me when I was young. And I just, you know, I dove very, very, very deep in that well, and it just imprinted in my brain. But it's very connected to, like, I mean, someone asked me this recently about my singing style, and my answer was like, there's two sources of inspiration. One is Bob Dylan's phrasing, and the other is like all the 90s hip hop that I grew up on. Not all of it, but some specifically, because they both will like morph and twist words in sort of like painterly ways, you know what I mean?
This is so gratifying to me to hear, because I don't make many notes for these conversations because I just want to listen to what people are saying and bounce around. But I wrote down your phrasing. Like, I had the experience of listening to your album, and for those who haven't heard it, and I don't want to mischaracterize anything here, Damon, but it has a kind of pastiche quality, if that makes sense, or collage, something like that. And so there's a lot of sensory overload happening. And your voice, I think you have long utilized your voice. This is going to sound dumb because I think everyone uses their voice as an instrument, but I feel like you use your voice as something of a textured instrument. So the lyrical intent can go by you. And what I've done in recent days is read along to the lyric sheet as I'm listening to you. And I must say, I marvel at your phrasing, because some of that stuff has gone right by me. I'm like, holy shit, that's what he's saying. I didn't know that, because you stretch a word. Like I say, and What I Want, when you sing stars are erupting today, it reminds me of Dylan saying, like, strike a match, the saints are coming through. Like, it's just that little lilt of phrasing, and that's one direct thing. Again, patience to everyone listening to my show all the time. I'm going to talk about Bob Dylan for a little bit. I do that often, but it's always nice when it comes up. All I'm getting at is it's gratifying for me to hear you say that for all the things we talk about with someone like Dylan, the phrasing, the way he takes a word and stretches it out, and the way that's related to hip hop people, that is a remarkable, I just want to say that's a remarkable connection. I think we may be coming from the same place. So, so you're saying this is sort of subconscious, but your phrasing is conscious. Like, you're aware of how you're singing and what you're doing. Is that a way of putting it?
It's cool to sort of step back and think about it for a second. I mean, there's sort of two things. There's the Bob Dylan approach, and then the way I do it, or what I've internalized. When I'm, and this is the same thing as Bob Dylan, but when I'm singing, okay, like stars are erupting today, right? the words have this meaning, right? And there's an emotion that I feel when I say those words. And there's a certain emotion I need to embody when I say certain words. But the phrasing is, I mean, really, it's my singing is just rhythmical. Like, that is really what it's about. Notes, I mean, honestly, I think maybe all singers are like that. Like, all good singers are just rhythm singers. Like Frank Sinatra, of course, he had fucking perfect pitch and is the most wonderful singer ever existed in pop music. But like, that guy's fucking playing to the, he's a drummer, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And Bob Dylan worships Sinatra, you know? And so these people are like, so I do my own version of that, which is like purely, it's rhythmical. And so I won't write words that don't fit the meter either. But I mean, it gets even more complicated. It's hard even to parse it out, but I will because it's fun to think about it. I write these songs as improvisations, right?
Yeah.
So I'm feeling, let's say, happy, okay? I'm feeling happy. And I sit down and I start feeling happy and I start playing these chords and I feel happy in my body. And so I start singing these words out of my mouth and like, I'm not conscious of what I'm saying. It's subconscious. And most of the time, there's actually some story that's being told, but I'm not really privy to that. What I'm doing is I'm pushing it out of my system in this happy, rhythmical way. Like, it could be like a sort of sexy feeling. It could be an angry feeling. It could be a sad feeling. It could be childlike, like what I want. So I'm embodying that feeling. And then the words twist and turn to use rhythm to convey the feeling. So I mean, it's hard to explain, but that's actually what I'm doing, like subconsciously. Like if I was saying what I want about like shooting you in the head, I would rhythmically phrase it differently.
Yes.
But I'm not. I'm saying sleep, little baby, sleep. So I phrase it in this way that gently touches the bar. Like I don't want to like overstep on the ends of the bar and I kind of just spread it out, you know?
Yeah. Do you?
And Ian is about this like wayward person. So my phrasing is like gone. Like I'm so behind the beat, I'm like barely in the bar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas like Round the World, I'm urgent in the beginning, so I'm pushing it. It's just like that kind of thing. It's hard to explain. I've never really gone into that much detail, but that's what I'm doing.
No, and I appreciate that. What I wondered about is because I've heard, or read rather, you talk about how songs come to you kind of at once in a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
But based on your what we were just talking about in terms of the rhythm of your singing, are you an artist who will kind of make mouth sounds initially before you have your words down kind of thing?
I will, unless the words come through the mouth sounds.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes I'll just be able to make the mouth sounds. But sometimes like Round the World, for example, those lyrics were like maybe 85% fleshed out. Just first take, you know?
Yeah. And this is, for those who don't know, this is like an epic 9-minute song that I think, if I recall correctly, predates our current pandemic. However, it's one of these songs where if you listen to it, you're like, oh, this guy's clearly singing about
the
pandemic. You're not the only person I've talked to. Kurt Vile from Philadelphia. Maybe it's a Philadelphia thing because Kurt Vile was on the show talking about how he wrote these songs and about viruses and cures. And it was well before the pandemic. And then he realized after. So sorry, this is going to be a bit of a tangent. That is a song that is something of, I think that song, and I also think Boys and Exodus, like there's, you're in a rare position here, I think, Damon. I think you got a couple of centerpieces on your album where I'm just like, holy shit, like this is amazing stuff. And I feel like when I say centerpiece, I mean, here's a song that might capture the theme, the conceptual theme and sound the best. And everything might emanate from that. I think that's too simplistic because chronologically, you wrote the song. So you just said some of your songs are 20 years old here. Is that right?
Yeah, but only some of them would be not adjusted to fit the time in which I was producing it. So like what I want, that's tangential, but it actually happens to connect in a loose way. You know, I was saying, I don't mean to repeat myself, but in another interview about it, like that one, it's like a young person struggling with this mortal coil. Like he's just saying he wants to be released from it, you know? And then he's talking about his power and his potency in him. So that theme, you know, is tangential, I suppose, but it actually kind of relates to this idea of death jokes the kind of early idea of what I meant by death jokes that exists in songs like Exodus, or Boys, which I can get into in a minute, but like,
But
you asked me something that was interesting. What did you say? You said, oh, centerpieces. And then, oh, real quick on the curved vowel thing. I mean, I'm not surprised. It's kind of nice to hear that. I think when people are kind of tapped in, this kind of shit just happens because you're just being fed stuff like that guy or the way I'm doing or any of these. They're not, it's not like scratching your chin and then taking out your like quill pen and like writing out your plan for the songs. You know what I mean? Like, sure, there's a little bit of that and some people more than others, but for people who are like tapped in, it just kind of comes to you, you know?
I believe, here's my thing. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this a long time and this happens a lot. It's not necessarily all about world shaking events, but I have discovered that I think artists, musicians, songwriters in particular, maybe comedians are in the same boat. They'll write a thing that is inadvertently prescient. Like they'll just, there's something they're tapped into that is hyper real that the rest of us are just kind of too busy to tap into. And I really sincerely think the songwriters that I love the most will say something and you won't get it at the time sometimes.
That's
but
right.
A couple of years later, you're like, wait a minute, was that written
That's
about
right.
the thing? And they'll say, no, I wrote that. I mean, in some cases, you know it wasn't because it predated it. You got it. You got the
That's
album
right.
and then 3 years later, something happened. Does that resonate with you that musicians?
Oh, absolutely. Because there's some kind of lightning rod that all musicians who are kind of on the wavelength will just, they have and they receive something and it flows through them. And you can, you know what? You can spot them. There's that type and there's the type that doesn't have it, you know? And the other type, you can just tell like, oh, this is so cerebral and they're just kind of like futzing about. And
well, I mean,
you know,
Kurt has a song on a record he put out. I think it was this past year. Sorry, you're from Philly. Do you know Kurt at all? Have you ever encountered him?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, many times over the years.
Okay, yeah. He's got a song, and the chorus, I believe, is "Touch something, caught a virus." and then,
yeah,
like,
dude.
And he wrote it.
Yeah.
He says he wrote it.
Yeah.
Well, before we were all like, I gotta wash my hands.
He's,
I gotta wear a mask.
Telling the truth. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, my song literally goes round the world, let it rattle, round the world. You know,
I want to ask you about
over and over again.
Yeah. And so Let It Rattle, just so people know, Damon, I don't know how much you want to divulge, but you had a particularly rough bout of COVID. Is that right?
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny, you know, pertinent to all this stuff. That's just surface. You know what I mean? Like, I know that's in the bio and stuff. And she put that in there maybe because it sort of frames it. But really, you know, that bout of sickness that I faced was certainly not unique, you know.
Yeah.
But also, but it made me come face to face with how much I cling to myself and to my health and to my well-being and my safety and my security. And it put me into my own little gauntlet. I went through my own little pandemic, and we all did. Of course, there were real things. I got sick, and many real things occurred. But there was also this psychological, kind of spiritual, emotional pandemic that I went through and that everybody did. And that's what I was singing about. You know, that's what I was singing about.
So, but in Round the World, there's a line here, those TB blues. Is that a reference to tuberculosis?
Yeah, it's a Hank Williams song. And he's saying the same thing. He wrote it during the TB. There's a big like epidemic of it at the year that he wrote it.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, he talks about TB blues and he sort of uses the metaphor as well. And so I'm referencing him and I'm telling myself that they're not true, you know, that like the psychosis around it, like the psychology around it and that fear. Yeah. I mean, it's fucking scary to get sick, but there's an extra layer of skin that like the propagated fear, you know what I mean? The sort of like the ripple effect, you know, that's what I'm referring to.
Okay.
And I think we just went through all of our own crises internally. You know, because we are faced with a challenge to our existence, you know, really.
Yeah. When I heard Let It Rattle, I did think of a death rattle, but I also know from my own experience with bronchopneumonia or pneumonia, like you get a rattle, like you hear your breathing has like a rattling. So sorry. I was just like, this is
That's cool.
Hey, thanks for listening to Creative Control, as always. As you may have heard me mention, I recently lost my day job, and I've had a few conversations with people since who've said, you had a day job? I thought your podcast was your day job. When I explained why it hasn't been my day job to a friend, he suggested I should share some of this information with people like you listening right now. So, in short, unless they have some giant exclusive million-dollar contract, podcasters are not paid to make stuff by companies like Apple and Spotify. Podcasters do not make any money from streaming royalties. Ad revenue is dependent on a certain threshold of downloads each month, and even if your show is accessed 30,000 times a month, the income you get is actually really minimal. So podcasters like me usually make time in our lives to support our communities and our interests to make these shows, and our most reliable source of income for this work is, in fact, crowdfunding. In my case, it's my Patreon. So if you'd like to receive ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else, regular newsletters and blog posts, bonus audio content, and support my work, quite literally, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Like, there's something about your record where I think you're dealing with the fact that life is finite.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some darker allusions to people wanting off the ride, I think.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a very compelling and poignant lyric about, where is it here? Sorry, I do have a note here. Here it is. It's from Exodus. When I fall to dust beyond this earth, you can use me, you can use me. And then later on, which, by the way, in the context of sampling Lenny Bruce, Jay Dilla, Richard Pryor.
Wow, I thought about that.
The Beatles, in fact, I think is also something you tried to get. Like, I think you know, when you sample people who are gone, for some people, I mean, obviously there's a legality and a bullshit, like there's all that stuff, but I think it's like I'm taking your work and repurposing it, and I'm giving it a new context. And I thought of that when I read those lines, just given the choices you made, because since I'm on it, Damon, sorry if I'm all over the place today, but I...
Not at all. That was a very good insight. I never thought about that, actually, but it's totally accurate.
Do you think that was an illusion you're saying?
I did not intend that one, but I'll tell you what I meant, but it's totally great layer to it all, another layer to it all. I mean, what I was singing about was in the midst of all of what I just described, this sort of like this me kind of clinging to this existence and being so wrapped up in me, really, ultimately, not just like my individual health and safety and stuff, but like me. I felt it representative of a greater clinging to the me's all around the world that we really, I feel very much witness to. I think we all feel witness to. And so like, I started writing these songs, and Exodus rather was maybe the first one where these lyrics were like encouraging me to question what I identify with. Now, I should say as a side note, this is not my idea. You know, it's there's a spiritual perspective in many different religions over the years, in many different parts of the world for fucking millennia that say just this, and. One in particular is a Hindu perspective that I really gravitate towards and I've been connected, you know, felt connected to for many years. But it's been in all you know, traditions. And this idea that like this identification with my body and my little identity as Damon and all this stuff, this little egoic structure is like only part of my true self and really not the most important thing in my life. And I have some truer identity, which, you know, persists despite whatever happens to this little guy. And so I was reminding myself of that and gratefully sort of remembering that my music is sort of is beyond me and it didn't come from me anyway. And I sort of, like we said, Kurt Vile getting this little download, it's coming from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And let it be of service. Like that's, I mean, that was sort of the Aim and Dune's mantra for a long time. And I kind of had to remind myself of that. And that's what death jokes meant. It was that like death or the pandemic or whatever the fuck you want to call it is teasing me, you know, a little bit. It's trying to like provoke me to letting go. And so that was the original meaning of this album, Death Jokes. In the midst of the pandemic, when everybody was so gripped with the seriousness, I was like, what if I had some levity or something?
The album is called Death Jokes. On Exodus, there's these lines, though, that twists it a little bit. You say life is hard. Well, at least you think it is, but it's a joke. Someday we lose it, so use it. Now, I get the sort of urgency within that. The notion of like time is actually tighter than we thought, you know, like if we've learned anything together right now, it's that it's shorter. There's an expression, life is short, but maybe it's even shorter than we thought. The album is called Death Jokes. Here you're saying life is a joke. There's a connection there that where you're like, things are absurd. And we might as well get on with it. Sorry, this is my reading of it. I'm not saying you're saying this.
Please, yeah.
But my reading is everything is a bit absurd, but you need to get over that on some level and live the best life you can because it's not going to be around forever. I know this is maybe schmaltzy and hallmarky and obvious to some people, but have I encapsulated some of your mentality?
Yeah. I mean, it's so true that we call it schmaltzy, you know?
Yes.
But it's like, you know, that like, don't take this was to me because I was the one freaking out, right? I was aware of the world freaking out, but in the beginning, this death jokes thing was about me grappling with this. So I was saying to myself, don't take yourself so seriously. You know, you say life is hard. I was talking to me.
Yeah.
And I was talking to me in the middle of the pandemic. You say life is hard, but it's a joke, you know? And if you look from some other perspective, if anybody does any kind of introspection, or if anybody has any kind of spiritual exploration or practice or questioning, you kind of discover there's a lot more than like me sitting here fucking emailing and fucking, you know, trying to fucking whatever I'm trying, attempting to do to kind of feel good about myself in this world. There's not that it's meaningless because within its little realm, it's very meaningful, but there's a lot, it's not the end. And so don't take it so seriously. You know, and I think if you don't take it so seriously, you can actually get a lot more out of it. That's sort of what I was saying.
Yeah. I was raised Hindu, but I didn't really engage with it too much. I was too rebellious for it. And I'm not a religious person myself. However, when you were speaking of your, of how Hinduism spoke to you, it reminded me very much of how George Harrison from the Beatles related to it as well. Like I am insignificant. I'm a beetle, but I'm insignificant. I'm a speck compared to the continuum of the universe. Mm-hmm. That was his reading of Hinduism. Again, I'm not so steeped in it that I can speak to it critically or whatever, or have an analysis. But within what you were saying, do you have a sense of how did Hinduism enter your world?
Yeah, I mean, very specifically, I mean, it's a long story, but around the Love album, right before it, I was faced with my own kind of like, a life crisis of sorts, and we all have them, and I have a turning point, whatever, and I was like decided to kind of make my put love and service kind of into my life in a different way, and I started a meditation practice, and I was like at a dead end, you know. I remember when I did the Through Donkey Jaw record, I was really at a dead end, and then I kind of turned a corner, made this decision, and I started meditating, and I had a meditation teacher, and I got very involved, and I did silent retreats. And I started getting turned on to these different teachers. And the first guy I got turned on to had sort of a non-dualist perspective, which means not two, right? So not me and a guy in a beard, but this idea of some inner resource that is some sort of spirit. Some people call it an awareness, you know, universal awareness or whatever, watcher and stuff. Anyway, the deeper I got into that, you know, the stranger things got. And, you know, more I was kind of directed to different people. And so from that teacher, I kind of got turned on to a lot of other teachers, all of whom were dead. And the last one that I got turned on to was this guy, Ramana Maharshi. And he comes from a very specific line of Hinduism. I don't know much about Hinduism really either, except for this one line of thought, which is maybe contentious to some degree, was Vedanta. Mm-hmm. So Advaita Vedanta is like a non-dualist idea that God is sort of within you, you know. And there are lots of teachers, some many older than him, but he died probably in 1951 or something like that. And he's like, you know, the big dog. And he just became like my friend, you know what I mean? I just kind of stuck with him for a couple of years. So that's where I got turned on to. And he doesn't have any writings, right? He didn't speak to people. He would just meet with people and just sit there, you know? And he had some very simple writings, but his teachings are very simple. And he's just amazing. So yeah, that's my relationship to it. And that's where I got these ideas from.
I'm sorry to hear that you struggle with anything at all. That
you I'm not alone.
You're not alone. But I'm sorry to hear that. And I understand, though, that congratulations are in order. You have a son? You have a child? Is that right?
I have two daughters.
Oh, sorry. I totally got that wrong.
That's true.
You have two children.
Yep.
And when are they? Were they born during this time? The pandemic?
Yeah, one was born April 21 and one was born May 23. So one of them was born right in the middle of the pandemic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I know I have two children as well.
Cool.
It's probably self-explanatory that it altered me. Given the stuff that you've struggled with and given the sort of philosophical and I guess maybe even existential questions you seem to have on your brain as an artist, how has parenting impacted you in terms of your outlook on life? I don't mean to misconstrue it as, I feel like you were skirting around the notion of having sort of, not panic attacks, but just this anxiety about life.
Sure.
Is that of a course. Fair way of it?
Life.
Is that right?
Sure. Life is terrifying.
Yeah. So parenting will do two things, I think, or it can do myriad things. But for me, it has both centered me. Okay, I have a bit of a mission now. I have assignments that I have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But I think it can also, as you look around the world and see all these threats looming, you can get a little more anxious for your own peace of mind or whatever. How are you doing with that as a parent? How are you doing with the world as a parent?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's sort of like this fearful kind of like controlling part of me that wants to micromanage everything, especially now that I have kids, right? It's like, because they're the most important thing in my life, absolutely, you know? So that's activated. But then there's a wiser part of me that's sort of just been given to me from them where, I mean, they're the most powerful things in the world, you know what I mean? They're like, I don't need to go into too much detail, but these two girls are very, very powerful. And I can't really explain it really, but I'm not worried about them.
Yeah.
And then there's a great irony to it too. I mean, maybe some kids would have a different disposition. I get it, but I don't know. Somehow I just feel great. I don't know. I feel, I'm not worried about them.
Good.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
That's good. So are they on the album? Is your experience with them on this record?
Well, the other one wasn't born until after it was basically done.
Right.
But the first one, you know, she's actually literally crying at the end of Marianne, if you listen carefully. And she's in the credits, so.
Yeah.
Proper
credit, that's good.
Yeah. I don't want to get sued for that one. But you know what? I mean, Purple Land, you know, because those lyrics formed right before she was born. So I was sort of writing them to her. But I wouldn't say, people have asked me before, it's like parenting change your relationship to music or the way you made this album. And I'd say, no, you know, it's, No, I this album did itself to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This album was like whatever process, whether musical or thematic, that kind of like came and grew in me was like not about. I didn't steer it. And so like when the children came, they were like tangential to that album process that was happening through me, you know?
Yeah.
So no, I mean, in a weird way, they didn't at all. Hmm. Even though they're more important than the music now, they didn't affect it in some weird way.
Well, when I hear someone, I don't know if you'll relate to this, but mm-hmm. when you become a parent, I've found, you become very reflective about life and your own life. And as your kids get older, mm-hmm. they reflect the good and the bad about you and all these sorts of things. And on some level, when you're mm-hmm. raising kids, because you have to get into their worlds, which are children's storybooks, mm. you know, children's content, you mm. end up revisiting your own youth. Or you think, yeah, that's a good book. Why mm-hmm. don't we read this book? Because it's the one you remember reading as a kid. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. When I hear that an artist has somewhat out of the blue decided, I'm going to learn to play piano, I just wonder if it's, in your case, I wonder if it's related at all to, I have a little bit of childhood regret. Like, I have a little bit of stuff where I'm like, I wish I was a better guitar player. For some reason, I play guitar more now than I did as a teenager. I'm a better basketball, I play with my son. I'm a way better basketball player now than I was in junior high and high school. I care way more about it. And I don't want to psychoanalyze myself here, but there's something, I think, circular about this experience where I'm like, hey, hanging out with my kids, kind of revisiting my youth with them, but also I'm older and I can't, there's no real rhyme or reason for it. Do you think there's any relationship with you wanting to learn new skills, make a cacophonous record on some level with the sort of chaos of being a parent and childhood?
You know, no, actually, interestingly, not at all. Like, in a very like contrary to what you would imagine, my children kind of almost feel more developed than me in some weird way. I've always been a child, you know, with my music, and like Eamon Dunes has always been spirit. It's always been pure and childlike. And so when I go into the studio, it's like I'm younger than they are in a weird way. It's more free. It's less calculated, even than maybe not the 1 year old, but the 3 year old. You know, it's like so. Yeah, actually, I know that's what one might think, but no, it's. I think it speaks to sort of how this music has always happened for me, where it's like, it's unconscious.
Well,
you know,
within,
or it's subconscious.
Okay. Here's another angle on it then. I appreciate what you're saying.
Mm. Yeah.
In terms of the people you've sampled here, and the voices you've sampled here, and I think even some of your lyrical intent, I feel like there's world building going on, if you know what I mean. Like, I feel like listening, when I listen to Death Jokes, I feel like I don't even know what planet I'm on sometimes. It's really skittering. But there's also a lot of knowledge sharing. The people you chose to sample are interesting because Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, I think safe to say forefathers of a certain kind of joke telling and comedy. Dilla, obviously a hugely pioneering influence, probably the biggest influence on hip hop in the last 20 years, let's say, on hip hop production. Then, curiously, do you not sample your piano teacher's teacher?
I do. Yeah. And
so teaching, like, you know what I'm getting at here?
I certainly do. And I mean, dude, there's just a lot going on in this record. So I didn't even think about all that, but there is a thing. Okay. So I'm talking about this malaise, sort of this dis-ease throughout the album, right? And all these characters in these kind of interstitial songs are like little character portraits of outcasts or people who are cast aside and sort of disparaged or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Struggling with human existence. And then the Round the World song, it's like maybe the first time where that kind of like the big eye watcher kind of angelic figure really takes the microphone and starts commenting about what they see going on in the world. And this happened to be during the pandemic, but this observer is kind of documenting stuff. That's the middle of Around the World. And there's a sample. Well, anyway, at the end of those verses, I say, or he says, or whatever. I always call it in the third person because it feels that way. Yeah. He's like, you know, my man Johnny used to come around and teach me. He learned from Nadia Boulanger way back then. you know, I like to listen to people like them because they've been around before all this. He said, keep it old fashioned and you can skip your next life. When it's all gone, you're going to wish you had some old fashioned around the world. And so like I saw as an antidote, my teacher, like Giannici was a grounding.
Yeah.
You know, he came from Nadia Boulanger, who, by the way, was a very important figure in contemporary music. She taught everybody from fucking Stravinsky and Ravel to Quincy Jones.
Yeah.
And he was this like this kid who got a scholarship to go to Paris and study with her. So he would come around and talk to me, but he would show me her exercises, and then he would just talk about her and how she would talk about importance of discipline and tradition and lineage and learning. So yeah, I never thought about it, but all these other people come in as these sort of angelic antidotes to the fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
And when I say pandemic, I mean the one between our ears, you know?
Yeah.
So really, really, I never fucking thought about that, but all of them are.
So, and within that, like, okay, I appreciate what you're saying about how parenting may not have an impact on your songs per se, but sometimes I'm doing this on a very small level, but like, I'm starting to realize that when I create things now, my kids might hear them when I'm not around. And so there's, again, on a very modest level, when you make things and put them on the internet, there's a little bit of legacy building going on, whether you mean, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not really.
I certainly do. It's so funny you say this. I mean, this is a great question that I know I keep batting away the child rearing question, but it actually exists in all of this, in my answers still. Like, it's totally right on. I mean, that's very interesting. Thought, I actually, these people are sort of teaching me as I was making it.
Yes.
And I was sharing this I'd made this because it hurts. Like what I've observed in the world is hurting me. And I'm sharing this because I want to help other people. And that, once again, you can call whatever the fuck you want. And you could call it Hallmark, but I'm not joking. Like that's why I've done Eamon Dunes music since Love. Before then. That before Love was just for me.
Yeah.
But from Love on, I am doing this to try and help you. I mean, I swear to God, that's why I'm trying to do it.
No, I believe you. I feel like even in your I've talked about some of the external teachers that you bring into the record. There are parts of me I'm like, is he singing this so that his kids hear it? Some of it is like instructive, some of it is sort of inspirational, like, fuck it. To be yourself, you know, that kind of stuff.
But I'm saying that to the kids and other people.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Is that like,
okay,
I'm not even conscious of that, but I'm singing to these listeners, whoever has that kind of like pure spirit in them.
Yeah.
Will connect with this music. And that's what I've experienced.
Yeah.
And the people who don't, I don't pay them any mind. It's fine. But for those who do, like, that's who I'm singing to.
Yeah.
So it is like that kind of relationship, but my kids, it's weird. I'm not even thinking about them, but I'm thinking more about the people I'm singing to now.
Well,
you know?
But now that I mention it, like, think about that. Like, your kids, these records are going to be around longer than you are.
I feel like they're going to see me. They'll have learned. But you're right. Totally. Absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've conveyed that to them just in life. That's my goal.
Yeah. It's nothing to be self-conscious about. It's just something to think about. Like, you know, most of us are generations past would be like, oh, my grandparents passed away. All I have is this box of letters they wrote to each other and the photographs.
It's really
true.
We're
of a generation where we're just constantly putting stuff out on the internet that doesn't seem to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So that is a different sphere. And just before we leave this, though, I must ask you, because my daughter will sometimes pitch me questions for the show.
Cool.
She's 9. Ramona wondered, she heard, is it Nadia Boulanger? Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
She heard her voice this morning at breakfast on your record, and she said, that's French. Are you interviewing this guy? I said, yeah, today. She's like, can you ask him if he understands French? So if you indulge me now, Damon, do you understand French?
Tell her I don't, unfortunately, understand French, but it doesn't matter because I get the general idea.
Yes. And you've included, I think, a translation in the lyric sheet.
I do
that
include a translation too.
I'm mindful of the time, so I don't want to keep you much longer, Damon, but I do. I feel like I haven't asked you enough about, I've characterized the album as being a little overwhelming. And I wonder if someone else were to say that, someone like me or someone else, have you heard this from people? Do you feel itself that in all of it, the beauty that I now see in it, someone were to tell you it's a bit of a chaotic listen, What would you say to that?
Well, I wouldn't use the word chaotic, but I would say overwhelming, because I think it's actually very logical.
Okay.
The more you sit with it, if you like listen to it over time, yeah, you'll see that shit is a fucking, every fucking I is dotted and T is crossed. Like it's and it actually has musical and thematic, it's totally logic.
Okay.
But it's like a fractal. And so that's, no, yes, yeah, so I wouldn't say it's a lot, it wouldn't say it's, I don't know what the other word you use, but it's certainly overwhelming.
I said cacophonous. Yeah.
Cacophonous is accurate because it is wild, but it's not, I don't know what the other word was, but it's certainly overwhelming. I mean, I listened to it all the way through and I think I can barely stomach it. It's brutalizing, but I think like part of what I wanted was to make something that felt brutalizing, because I do believe like these circumstances that like we find ourselves in are pretty tragic.
Yes.
And I'm serious. I care, you know?
Yeah.
I really do. So I am like shouting at people. You know what I mean? That's what I'm lullabying too, but I'm shouting too.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's like a you know, protest is loud and cacophonous, but they're saying shit that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. And I would agree. That's an excellent way of characterizing this album. It feels outspoken, but your phrasing's alluring, but your singing is relatively even tempered. Mm. So it's direct and you can hear,
right.
But I did, for anyone listening, if there's a lyric sheet that comes with the record, I would encourage everyone to read along sometimes, because
I would love it. It made me so happy.
Yeah.
Lyrics means everything on this album and all of them. So that'd be great.
Yeah. Okay, so as I say, I want to be mindful of your time, and I want to start to wind us down here. I want to ask you a couple of things. If people want to learn more about Eamon Dunes and you on the internet, where would you like to direct them? And the second question is kind of about future plans, whether you've been writing more music since the completion of this album, tour plans and whatnot, yeah, sort of interconnected things. But let's start with the internet, first of all. If people want to learn more about you, where would you like to direct them?
I mean, I think for the important stuff, I would ask them just to read interviews. Because that's all, I mean, you know, they could find my tour dates and music on wherever, all the normal platforms. But I think, finding more about the music would be interviews, you know? And then I'm touring this album starting in July. I'm playing New York and Brooklyn. I mean, I'm playing Brooklyn in May. Mm-hmm. And then I'm touring other places starting in July. And then, I've already started planning the next record.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
It always happens that way. So it's, and I plan to do it more quickly this time.
Okay. So there's stuff coming up. That's great. Well, that's amazing. Okay. I appreciate that. If we can go out on a song from Death Jokes for people to hear, I wonder if you can choose one for us and tell us why it came to mind.
Hmm. Maybe. I don't know why I just thought of I Don't Mind. Maybe because you said the word mind. but I think also it's it feels good to listen to this one. It's a I don't know. I like this one. I like them all, but I think it's I don't know. I got no reason other than I think it would sound good after we finish talking.
Look at you. The plague's coming. I don't mind. Yeah, I don't mind. When was this written exactly?
That was written like in April 2020. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and if they take me first, I'll come back for you.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. It's a heavy but great song. Okay. This is a brilliant new album called Death Jokes, everyone. I hope you'll check it out. It's by Eamon Dunes. And this is a song from it that appears in the second half of the record. It's called I Don't Mind. Damon, this was a tremendous pleasure for me. And
it was for me as well.
I really appreciate your time and I wish you the best luck. And I hope we talk again someday.
Thank you, Vish. Me too. You need love. I don't mind. For anyone. I don't mind. If you want, we could
small before you did, but you think of life on
Earth. New music there by Eamon Dunes. That was I Don't Mind from the new album Death Jokes, out May 10th on Sub Pop. Very special thanks to Damon for being on the program. We never met before or encountered one another, but that was a really pleasant talk, and I think we got to some good stuff. I hope you agree, and I hope you enjoyed it. And again, I want to thank Damon for appearing on this, the 800 and what is it, 63rd? Yes, 800. I should know this. I always forget by the time I do these outros. 863rd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available pretty much wherever you get your podcast. If you can't find an episode you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Also, please click on the hyperlinked text in the show notes that says follow Vish online to find me on social media and whatnot. Most importantly these days, I'd ask you to visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. These days, in fact, as I'm speaking to you, every other episode is for subscribers at the $6 American a month Patreon tier. Every other episode is freely available, but then every other episode from those ones, $6. It's kind of hard to convey that, but I think you know what I mean. And yeah, we're on a sort of hybrid subscription plan here. It's an experiment, but I hope it works out well, because I've been talking a lot about the Patreon and hoping to make some sort of regular income doing this work. And I would like to start talking about it less. And this is, in a way, I think, going to help with that if this works out. So anyway, if you can, if you're interested in hearing every single episode in its entirety, that's what to do. And there's other tiers as well if you can't afford that, just to support the show. So please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today if you can. Thank you so much. I also want to thank the Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. And you can order records right from that website, by the way, if you're not in Alberta, where they're based, in Edmonton and Calgary. So please go do that. I also want to thank independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my dear friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some of his music on the show. You can learn more about him at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode featuring Eamon Dunes. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll check out Death Jokes. If you can, subscribe to this podcast or follow it. Leave nice ratings and reviews on your pod platform and tell your friends all about the show. That would help spread the word in so many ways. So thank you for doing or contemplating doing any of those things. And thank you for listening. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.